Welcome back to Misunderstood. I'm your host, Rachel Yucatel. Today, we dive into the intricate world of true crime with a special guest who has not only reported on some of the most baffling cases, but has also taken it upon himself to solve them. Today, we are honored to have Billy Jensen back on the program. He's an investigative journalist renowned for his relentless pursuit of justice for unsolved murders and missing persons. After 17 years of writing countless stories with no closure, Billy decided to take matters into his own hands, combining traditional investigative methods with modern digital techniques. His efforts have led to the solving of 10 homicides and the successful location of several missing persons. Billy has brought his investigative skills to television as a senior producer and investigator for Crime Watch Daily, an executive producer and co-host of Unraveled on Discovery Plus. He also co-hosts the First Degree podcast and co-created Jensen and Holes, the Murder Squad podcast. Billy's dedication to true crime was further highlighted when he helped complete Michelle McNamara's book, All Be Gone in the Dark, after her untimely passing. In this episode, we explore some of the fascinating topics Billy has tackled throughout his career. Whether you're a true crime enthusiast or new to the genre, this episode promises to provide a compelling look into the blend of traditional and innovative investigative techniques that are shaping the future of crime solving. And we get into some of the most exciting cases right now that he's following, and you should be too. So please enjoy my conversation with Billy Jensen. Billy, thank you so much for coming back on Misunderstood. How are you doing?
I'm doing all right. How are you doing?
Good, thank you. So it's been in the news recently. I had you on before to talk about the Gilgo Beach murders.
Yeah.
Can we just get a little update on everything that's happened since I saw you last, and also like what's going on today?
Well, with the Gilgo Beach case, obviously you've got, he's been charged. I think probably he had been charged with the three killings. He has been charged with the fourth now since the last time that we talked. Wow. And we've got, he has not been charged with any of the other bodies that have been found. You know, we've got six other bodies there. Mm. So he's in jail right now, awaiting trial. It's going to take a really, really long time. His wife and kids apparently just left the house because they were searching the house, and it looks like they're maybe going to be digging up the backyard and things, and nobody really, everybody's being tight-lipped in terms of what they're looking for. So that's right. The latest kind of update that we have there. And apparently the wife has signed a deal with Peacock, I believe, to do a some sort of a show or something like that. So they've been following her around everywhere, which is a little, you know, disconcerting for a lot of people. Obviously, New York has the Son of Sam law, which says that you're not allowed to profit. If you're the perpetrator of a crime, you cannot profit from it. This came from when, you know, whether, you know, David Berkowitz wanted to write a book or something along those lines, you can't do that. But that does not extend to family members. So apparently
at the end of the day, we haven't found out if he's going to be charged with the client, or he's charged right now, right? But if he's going to be found guilty or whatever, so would that have anything to do with it, because we haven't seen the end of the trial?
Yeah, I mean, possibly. Yeah, I mean, nobody really wants to obviously, I mean, if he ever wanted, he hasn't been talking, and mm-hmm. if he wanted to come out and put out a book or something like that, I'm not quite sure what the legal ramifications of that would be. But as far as her going, and a lot of people are upset about that, obviously, just because, you know, this guy was living with her under her roof.
Right. Well, I was reading today in the New York Post that the son, the neighbors, and I don't know about the wife, but are basically saying he didn't do this, which I think is an interesting comment, because I was shocked that they would even comment about such a thing. And I was, mm-hmm. But also I was seeing that it is very circumstantial still. There's not hard evidence, at least, that they are bringing up, and they think that the people writing the article were saying that they think that there is a way for defense attorneys to get him off. Do you have any thoughts?
Well, there's apparently DNA that they have on on from the, I believe maybe the belt or something along those lines. Which that's the way that they eventually nailed him, because they had followed him and then he ate a piece of pizza. Pizza is
Right.
always used, by the way, because there's a lot of DNA on pizza crust. If you're a criminal, eat your crust. Don't worry about the carbs. And so there's a lot of evidence there, and there's also eyewitness evidence that he was the last person seen with the last victim of the four.
Was that Amber?
He had gone over to her house and had they tried to flip him or roll him and say that, oh, this is my girlfriend, get out of here, give me your money and everything. And he said he was upset, and he said, I want a freebie after this. And they said, yeah, it was a big ogre of a guy, and he drove a Chevy Avalanche. They could have solved this thing within a month. And the fact that this went on for so long is really just shows how bad the Suffolk County Police Department was back then.
So is their key eyewitness the boyfriend? Because
It
he
was a
met
room, the
this dude.
roommate sort of, yeah, but yes. Yeah, there was two guys there, but yeah, I mean, that
Well,
would have
the
been,
guy posing as the boyfriend.
yeah, and that's an eyewitness to say that he was in the room with her and was upset with her and had so, but I think the DNA evidence is the biggest.
Interesting. All right, it will be interesting to see where this goes. Have they put anything on the docket for when the trial's going to start or when
Not
things are
that
going
I
to go
know
through?
of now. It's going to take a long time.
First of all, before we get into your book and some of these other crimes that you're following and things that I want to get into with you, can you just give our listeners a little bit of your background so they understand how long you've been doing this, why you've chosen to do this, how this became your path?
Yeah, I've been doing this coming up on 25 years. And, back in 1999, you couldn't make a living doing true crime. And I only wanted to do unsolved murder. So I was working at a newspaper, Village Voice on Long Island. They started a newspaper called the Long Island Voice. From there, I started stringing for the New York Times. And that's when I started getting crime stories. So I would be writing crime stories and got an assignment from the Post, didn't really like it. It felt very exploitative. And I said, you know what? I just want to do unsolved stuff, which meant I couldn't just become, I was on the path to becoming a crime reporter. So I became an editor, and started being a managing editor and ran newspapers, but then I would write my stories on the side and then publish them there. So I started publishing stories, and they always were unsolved in nature. And they were, they won awards and things, but I came up with an idea on how to solve some of these, and it was using social media and using geotargeted social media advertising to try and identify perpetrators based on grainy, video of street crimes. So
And was that completely new at the time? I
yeah,
mean,
nobody had been doing that, as far as I know. Every police department didn't get it, didn't understand it. And I said, listen, this is something. So I would see, I saw the first case was a guy who was killed in, he was attacked on a street in Chicago. And this guy attacked him, punched him, knocked him out in the street. And then when people gathered around him, the guy yelled at all the people and then he left. And then 30 seconds to 45 seconds later, a cab ran over him and killed him. And they couldn't identify this person for 6 months. And I said, well, let me give it a shot. And through a bunch of different things that I read about in Chase Darkness, we were able to identify him. And I went to Chicago and got other people to ID him. And I cross-referenced it with they actually publish, which I don't believe in, but they publish the mugshots. Cook County does. So I was able to gather all that information, give it to the police, and then about 4 months, they got an arrest warrant. He had fled. I told them where he was. And then they eventually got him 4 months later. And then I was just hooked of doing it that way and spending a lot of money on these ads and everything, and was able to, solve by myself, really, at least, or identify, about a half dozen, and then help with the other five or six, just little bits of information.
How hard is it to get people on board with you? Like, if it's an unsolved crime, I feel like a lot of people have kind of given up on it or it's been forgotten in general, and you seem like a one-man band out there until someone finally says, Oh yeah, I see what you're doing. And you probably already almost solved it at that point, if not solved it.
Yeah,
You know, how hard is that?
calling up the police departments, this is what I do. I say, "Hi, listen, I'm an investigative journalist, but I'm not doing this for a publication. I saw you posted this video. Do you need any help with it?" Is it open? I say. And then they say, "Yeah, it's still open." I say, "Well, listen, this is what I do." Half of the people go, "Oh, we already have a website, or we already have a Facebook." And I'm like, no, this isn't like Taylor Swift could post this and it wouldn't be solved because we have to get everybody within that, square block or square area or whatever. So I have to target every person in that area, and which is going to cost money. And then, maybe half the people get it, half the people don't. So then from there, I say, if they say, "No, we know who it is, we're close." And then I just say, "Okay, I'll leave you be." But if they say, "Yeah, we need help with it," and it's been a lot more receptive than it was 8 years ago. When I was initially doing it in 2016, there was a lot of resistance, but occasionally you would find a cop that's just really into it. And then you'd find cops that I called up a cop once in San Jose, and I saw this video of this guy killing this other guy, and I said, "Do you need help?" And he said, "Yeah." But he said, "Oh, that's really interesting what you do. Can you help me with this fugitive case?" And I said, "I don't really do fugitive cases. It's a whole different beast. You know who the person is. Fugitive cases usually is what you see in America's Most Wanted. You know who the person is. You know what business they're in, what their likes and dislikes are, and then you could
They're
say, 'Oh,
just
wait,
on the run.
I go bowling with that guy. That's Fred. It's not Phil.' And then they arrest him." So I said, "Yes." I said, "Fine. I wanted to help." And then he told me the guy was in Mexico. And I was like, "Oh my God, I don't even speak Spanish. How am I going to do this?" And then he showed me a picture of him, and the guy was a ginger. It was like a ginger American in Mexico. I was like, "Okay, this might be a little bit easier." And I swear, I posted the ad, and they thought he was in two different places. So Mazatlan and Puerto Vallarta or something. And then I posted the ad. I found like where Americans would hang out. I basically searched for like Hooters and places where Americans would be. Posted the ad around that radius, and within, a week, no, within, sorry, within an hour, I had, his liquor store guy, I had his landlord, I had all these people, and then he went running, and then eventually we were able to get him. And but that one took a while, but it was just
But how did
amazing
that
how,
work? Do you have to collaborate with the Mexican police department?
Well, they did, I was able to say he's here, and then he left, and then he's here, and then he's left. And I was collaborating with my guy in San Jose, and then he was collaborating with Mexico. And Mexico, obviously, there's a lot of corruption there. So when he was arrested, when they finally got him, he asked, "How much is my bounty? Because I can double it." And that's usually what happens in Mexico. Yeah. And then a lot of times the guys will say, "All right, give me, double the money." But luckily these guys said no, and they were able to send him back up here.
So what was it like solving your first unsolved crime? I mean, was it a rush? Was it exciting? Was it emotional?
It was definitely a rush for like 30 seconds. And then there was such a come down because I'd become so kind of close with the family, his family, and he was raised by his aunt, and I had become very close with his really who was in all it was his sister, even though it was kind of like his cousin, and Drexina, and she and but it was just I became so close with like him almost because he was a very he was a bartender, he was a great dancer, he was always like nappily dressed, and he was just like very just put together guy. And just to see him, always put a lot of care into his appearance, and everybody loved him. And just to see him, sorry, I said nappily dressed, that's wrong, it's Natalie dressed. Can we cut that out? Yeah, that's bad. Yeah, so he was always very dressed to the nines and very put together, and just to see him just killed on the street like that. And then you kind of I wanted to you want to meet this guy, and he's dead, and that was the thing that I didn't expect that to happen. So it was like a 30-minute rush, and then there was the rush of identifying him, and then there was the rush of getting the call from Drexina saying they got him. And that was a rush too, and that was a little bit better because it was like, okay, they got him. Yeah. And I was able to share that with her, so yeah.
It is interesting what you do, and looking at all the stuff on you and your books, having read them, you're more than a journalist, I think, because you really get involved in the family, the community, and you are the one that's trying to almost have a voice for the person that no longer has a voice, and you are the connection that's bringing their case full circle. And I think that that's, I can really appreciate that. I think what you do is great.
Yeah, I'm friends with these people mostly on Facebook, but they'll text me or whatever, and just they a lot of times they just want to talk. So, my blue light's always on Facebook, and they'll see it at 2 a.m. and just want to talk. And they just, because the police have stopped talking to them. The police have a lot of other murders, There's 5,000 unsolved murders every year.
Yeah, I was going to ask you about that. In looking this up, I saw that there's currently over 200,000 unsolved murders, with about 5 to 6,000 increasing yearly. That's
Yeah,
crazy.
it's more, it's like, I mean, I wrote that back in 2016. It's like 250 now.
Wow. Yeah.
Yeah.
And have you did you follow that docuseries on Netflix, American Nightmare?
I did not know.
Do you remember the story of the couple that was in California, and the girlfriend got kidnapped while they were in their home together? The Vallejo Police Department accused the
Yeah,
boyfriend,
yes, I know
and
that
that whole
story, yeah.
thing. Yeah, so that story, we had the journalist on here who the rapist was contacting him, and the police department still didn't believe him. It was crazy, but it's so interesting that there are all these unsolved mysteries, murders, and cops move from one thing to the next. And it almost seems, this was like a number one show on Netflix that people were obsessed about a couple months ago, but it really brought to light the fact that, police are human, and a lot of times if they're not interested, if they move on to another person, or they pinpoint who they think it is, and don't follow the signs, and so many things go unsolved. Which brings me into something I want to talk to you about, because I was reading it in some of your work about how a lot of there's not anything that's streamlined right now. Like if there's a murder in New Hampshire, and there are things going on in New Hampshire, there's no way to kind of put it into the system and know that this exact thing is going on, maybe in Massachusetts somewhere, that maybe the guy is a serial killer and you can connect the dots. And that's actually what happened in the American Nightmare case. That's how it was solved. And there's also another show called Unbelievable with a rape, where it was solved in a different space because of one cop who really was connecting the dots, but it wasn't through a system. What are
Yeah.
your thoughts on that?
I mean, it's definitely gotten better, but yeah, there's no centralized database for unsolved murders. There's no centralized database for missing persons or
How is that
unidentified
possible? Are
remains. Yeah. I
they
mean,
trying to create one?
there is one called NamUs for unidentified remains and missing persons, but the problem is that it's not, they're not forced to do it. It's all voluntary. So,
Oh.
you just It's possible because I remember complaining about this. I was on a History Channel show about D.B. Cooper. We were trying to solve the D.B. Cooper case, and they paired me with a former deputy director of the FBI, a guy named Tom Fuentes, really nice guy. And I was complaining to him about this. And he said it's because when they started the country, they were worried about tyranny. They weren't worried about this. So that's why you have 17,000 different police departments and AGs in different jurisdictions and everything not talking to each other. And as far as the police moving on to things, they've got a lot of cases that are just, especially the inner city stuff. They've got one case and then they could work it for a little bit and then they're going to get another case on top of it. And if they don't solve it within a week, it's going to go. It's just what happens. They're just waiting for somebody to probably usually to tell on somebody else. So you have this system that you that it, and it's because why it's because we have so many guns and we have so much drugs and we have so many gangs and we have so much transient population and we have a distrust of the cops. It's a, you add all of that together, that's the reason why.
If you felt stuck trying to lose weight, you're not alone. Enter Weight Loss by Hers. It's designed to support you in reaching your goals. And Hers now offers access to an affordable range of FDA-approved GLP-1 medications, including the Wegovy pill and the Wegovy pen. With Wegovy at Hers, lose up to 20% or more of your body weight when combined with diet and exercise. It helps you regulate your appetite, eat less, and keep weight off. Plus, Wegovy is the first GLP-1 available in a pill, so there are no needles needed. Everything is 100% online through Hers. You'll connect with a licensed provider who will determine if treatment is right for you. If prescribed, your medication is delivered right to your door. No insurance necessary. And it doesn't stop there. Weight loss by Hers goes beyond medication by offering access to 24/7 messaging with your care team and tons of in-app lifestyle and nutrition tips like recipes, meal plans, fitness videos, sleep content, and more. Even better, with a range of affordable GLP-1 options, Hers makes it simple to find an approach that fits your needs and your budget, if eligible. You'll get a treatment plan personalized to you and unlimited dosage changes as needed. It's weight loss designed to work with your life. Ready to reach your goals? Visit forhers.com/women to get personalized, affordable care that gets you. That's forhers.com/women. forhers.com/women. Weight loss by Hers is not available in all 50 states. Wegovy is the registered trademark of Novo Nordisk AS. To get started and learn more, including important safety information, Wegovy clinical study information, and restrictions, visit forhers.com.
You talked earlier about how expensive it is to kind of follow the trail on a lot of these things. Are individuals from families of unsolved murders calling you and asking to hire you, or police departments funding it? How does it get funded?
Oh, hell no. No, that was just funded by my savings or whatever I was making, you know, at the time. And that's what I still do now, you know, just dipping into my savings, being like, I want to spend $500 on this ad, that kind of thing. It's only towards, it all goes to Facebook and to, and now to, you know, to Instagram and then to Twitter and just trying to geotarget these ads. It doesn't go to, you know, my, you know, travel or anything like that. Just go straight to that.
Yeah. Wow. Incredible. Okay. So I want to ask you how you pick the unsolved murders that you kind of get obsessed with that you want to follow.
Mm-hmm. So what I do is, you know, and the cases that I'm doing are not cases that they would ever make a movie out of or be on Netflix or whatever. You know, these are usually things that happen on the street. Mm-hmm. And I have Google Alerts set up, so I see every video of, hey, we're looking for this person, or a still picture or something like that from security cameras. I take that and I kind of file it away for 2 weeks. Then I'll go back and I'll do a Google search on it and to see if they've caught the person. So I do a Google search based on usually the victim's name. Most of the time they've caught the person, sometimes they haven't. From then, if it's a video that I'm thinking, wow, it's 2 weeks, they haven't caught him, that's a pretty good video. I bet if I got that in front of the right person, they would be able to ID that person. Then I go to the police. I explain the situation. This is what I do. It's not, I don't want the reward. The reward's for the tipster. I don't need anything else. I'll keep in contact with you. This is it. And then, you know, most of the time now they say, okay. And then it's off to the races. So it really is based on, you know, the evidence that's at hand. And really how well the, you know, I've been working with a police department, the Philadelphia Police Department, and they do their video really well. You have a lot of people that just will just throw up the video. These guys are, and women are posting the video. They are stopping it and then pointing to, look at his shoes. These look like Adidas, blah, 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 like that kind of stuff that you don't see in most police departments. I got to give them kudos for that. And we worked and we were able to identify and get cases on two people. And then I'm working on another one with them now. So that's one of the things that I wish more police departments would do, you know, just a little bit extra effort in their AV squad.
I've always been curious because you end up seeing videos of people in certain circumstances on the street. How many cities have random cameras on all street corners?
Well, everybody has cameras, you know. It's just a matter of the fact that you've got, you know, the traffic cameras, you've got individual security cameras. None of them are linked. None of them, and traffic cameras are, but none of them are linked. None of them are synced, you know. So if, you know, one might have a clock that's wrong or something like that. It's different over in England where you've got a lot of security cameras that are all linked that are from the government. Here it's different. So again, that's civil liberties and all that. So you've got to, you know, the police have to go around and go to different businesses or residents, whether they have a Ring camera or something like that, and say, even if it was something that happened an hour earlier and didn't capture the murder but caught somebody walking down. That's such a big part now of investigations. And I remember during, during BLM, and there was a kid who had been found hanging. He's a black man, young black man, I think he was like 18 or 19, had been found hanging in a park in Palmdale. And the police said there were no security cameras. And I said, it's a public park. There's a ton of security cameras around there. This is bullshit. I'm going to go up there. And I went up there and I took a picture of every security camera and I talked to the people and said, do you have the footage and everything like that? And then I posted online and said, you're lying here. All these people have this. So it's a matter of just, like good journalism, it's shoe leather reporting, shoe leather detective work. You have to go, don't just call, go to each place and say, hey, do you have footage? Can we have it? Can we look through it and see
Right.
if there's a person there? Yeah.
Yeah. So I want to talk about your book, Killer Amidst Killers. Killers Amidst Killers. Sorry. It's a great book.
Thank you.
I think it's really interesting because, again, like you said before, you're not coming from a place of talking about murders that we unsolved murders that we've all heard of. These are people that are involved in middle America. A lot of the women are sex workers, and it's fueled by a lot of women that have, their lives depend on making money to, by selling themselves and to pay for drugs and to, it's not the people that we have next door. And a lot of those times, those women, or people who are murdered are forgotten. So, I think the book was fantastic. How did you come across these two girls that you first started, looking into their murders?
Yeah, in 2000, I think it was 17, I was working at a show called Crime Watch Daily with Chris Hansen, and the it was a Warner Brothers show, and I came across this story of these two best friends who lived together, who in a house in Columbus, whose bodies were found, who went missing at the same time. Bodies were found about a month apart, about 30 miles outside of town, in fields. And I said, there's something going on here. That's an interesting story. There had been one story written on it. And I drove out, I flew out there with a camera crew, and we went to they were staying at this home for lost children, which is not, it was just this guy's house. So we drove up there, and this was in South Columbus. And it was, I remember everybody scattered, and I had a police detail with me, or undercover detail. And then I started talking to the people there about the women, and I talked to this one woman comes out, and they said, well, let's go get Cece. They bring this woman named Cece out, and she looked like, a regular person that you'd see at a mall. And I'm talking to her, and she was their third best friend, and she was saying, as I'm talking to her, I got this sense that like I'm talking to the next victim. And she said something. There's always, whenever you're interviewing for a book or a project, a lot of times you will have one thing that hits you that fuels the next project, and or just hits you where you can't shake it. And she said something that I couldn't shake, which was, I said, does it give you any pause to get into a car? And she said, yeah, but I have to because I'm a drug addict. And that just hit me, and I couldn't shake that. So then I said, I have to keep on looking into this. And I wasn't doing for, we did the story for Crime Watch Daily. And I wanted to keep looking in, say, how many women have actually been murdered in this town that they haven't found? And, there was a guy named, that might have been a pimp named White Boy, and they had his phone number. And I'm talking to the police, and I'm like, well, why can't you? And then they're like, he's missing. This is how bad some police departments are. It's like, oh, he's missing. We can't find him. He's in the wind, they said. That was the quote. And I said, they gave me his phone number. They said, all we got is his phone number, right? And I do a Google search for the phone number, and I find there's another girl that he's put out there. There's an ad, a sex ad for another woman. So I go back to the police. I said, I'm not going to call this because it would screw it up, but I will eventually. But why don't we Why don't you set up a sting? Why don't you set up a date? And then hopefully, he'll probably be in the parking lot and then you can grab him. And they were just like, we're not going to do the investigation that way. I was like, well, you're not doing anything. And the murders are still unsolved. So it was that sort of stuff. A lot of jurisdictional nonsense too, because the bodies were found in Fairfield County. They lived in Columbus. It's like that sort of thing. And I would eventually find about 18 missing or murdered women in, starting in Columbus and then moving to Middletown, Ohio, and then moving to, Chillicothe had gotten a lot of play back in the day. Some of the women that whose bodies were found RODs, and whoever is with them just dumps their bodies. Some of the women are murders, and these murders are kind of happening under the cloak of, oh, these are just ODs because they don't find the bodies for a long time. And this is what was going on there. So that's what I wrote about. And it's, even though the book takes place in Ohio, it's happening everywhere. And especially now with how bad fentanyl is. Because the thing about fentanyl is really actually cheap to get a blue. It's, $1 or $2, but it lasts so little. So you have to get 30 or 40 a day. And, it's the barrier of entry, and it's so easy to make too, because it's synthetic. It's not like heroin where you have to get the poppy from overseas and bring it over. So we are in such a bad place right now with the fentanyl, and people are talking about it a little bit, but nobody really cares. And these are actually the people that are dying from it now are actually people that are our neighbors and are our family members that are dying from it.
Crazy. A couple other interesting things came out from reading your book. I was shocked about this topic you did about Stormy Daniels. You talked about how she was arrested in Columbus in 2018 at Sirens for illegal sexually oriented activity in a sexually oriented business. Will you tell everybody about this story? I thought this was crazy.
Yeah, this was the Columbus Vice Squad, who was incredibly corrupt and actually was disbanded because of how bad it was. And they had gone in, and this was definitely politically motivated because it was Stormy Daniels, and obviously she has a history with Donald Trump. They go in, the police go in undercover to, she was touring strip clubs. She's not from Columbus, but she was touring strip clubs, doing her thing. And the cops were there, and she, they were kind of, doing things that strip club patrons do. And she was rubbing up against them, which is what, dancers do sometimes. And she was arrested for that, along with a bunch of other women that were dancing there. And that was, the case was thrown out, but that just shows you what was going on with the Vice Squad and how political it was. And, Vice Squad's typically them and internal affairs. Internal affairs often are people that had gotten caught. And then they become internal affairs investigators, at least it used to be. But Vice Squad, you're dealing with drugs, prostitution, and gambling. So you've got a lot of corruption there, especially back in the day. But these guys were really bad. And then, they were, they picked up Stormy Daniels on this, no pun intended, trumped up charge.
And it says here that the four she sued the four cops and the city paid her $450,000 for wrongful arrest. Is that That's crazy.
So I mean, the Vice Squad was costing the police department also so much money too.
Speaking of the vice cop, Andrew Mitchell, the cop that was a suspect, whatever happened to him?
Oh, he's in jail. Yeah.
He is
No,
in
he's
jail.
in prison for a long time for he actually didn't he got off on that murder. So what happened was he was a corrupt cop. He would pick up women and who were sex workers and say, I can arrest you or you can have sex with me, which is rape. So he would do this to women. He picked up this one woman. He drove her to the back of a alleyway and drove really close up to the a brick wall. So she couldn't get her door out. The passenger side was up against a brick wall. She couldn't open and get out. So she's trapped. He's not in uniform, so she thinks she's going to be killed because obviously there's people killing sex workers out there. So she takes out her knife, stabs him in the hand, and then tries to escape into the back seat so she can get out the other way. He takes out his gun and shoots her six times. And he got off on that, which is insane. But he's gotten caught for a lot of other things.
He got off on
So
it on what? How?
on saying it was because she stabbed him first.
Got
So
it. It was
self-defense. Yeah.
self-defense. Wow, that's incredible. All right, what are some, so I just want to get back to the sex workers and the drug fueled issues that go into this in Middle America. And it's similar to the Gilgo Beach killings because that was sex workers as well. I think that's interesting because that's in Long Island, which I mean, still connected to New York. It's not like Middle America where like drugs are, I think, more rampant than in the outskirts. But like, is drug issues, I mean, is that happening everywhere now? Is this just happening more and more?
Everywhere. It's happening everywhere. Yeah, we are in such a crisis of monumental proportions. And you see it, and it's also with the fentanyl, it's a lot of times it's it's poisoning more than it is an overdose. They'll call it an overdose, but there was that story of the four comedians who were out in LA. Three of them died. They were doing coke and it was laced with fentanyl. You're seeing, so before it used to be, don't do coke because there's going to be fentanyl in it. Now it's never take a pill unless you get it from your doctor. So if you're at a party, and there's so many stories of young kids who are at a party and someone's like, here, take a Xanax, here, take a Vicodin. And they take it and you think a pill, oh, it's got a stamp on it. It looks like it's official. No, it was made in somebody's basement and they're adding fentanyl to it because it's cheap. So these kids take this and it only takes a little bit and then they die. And it's something that we're seeing it happen. We're shrugging. There's been a lot of it's not a you know when it comes to true crime, it's not a sexy story. People in true crime want serial killers. They want but this is the ultimate serial killer here. This is killing more people than anybody.
Yeah, it's very scary. Okay, talk to me about some of the cases that people have heard about, like the Iowa four, the murders there. Or any thoughts on bigger crimes right now there that we're not seeing something that you might see?
Yeah, well, the thing with what's happened with the glut of true crime is, and let me take you back like historically a little bit. So, true crime really I mean, listen, true crime is old as history. The Bible starts with a true crime story, but we've got so people were always interested in murder stories, obviously, with the penny dreadfuls in the 1800s, it got bigger, and the Old West stories, which were kind of true crime. Then it was the pulp magazines, which were really geared more towards men than to women. If you take a look at the old ads, they were for things like Be Taller or, Charles Atlas ads, that kind of thing. Then it became these paperback books like Anne Rule, Stranger Beside Me, the Ted Bundy, and then it switched more towards to females. And like my mom used to read those books all the time. So then you've got, so it was always under the radar for a really long time. And you had ID and everything. But really, the OJ trial was a tipping point. So the OJ trial introduced forensics to everyone. And everyone's like, wow, this is really interesting. Forensics, obviously, it was a huge case, devastating case. It had a celebrity, it had a pretty white girl who was the victim. Which is a theme that you'll see throughout true crime. So that whet the public's appetite, but it still was not ready to go mainstream yet. What happened in between was CSI and NCIS, like those, and Law and Order. So those procedurals, everybody got really into that for a really long time. And then you had ID, and it was still very much under the radar. Then Making a Murderer came out. Well, then for Serial came out first. Then Making a Murderer, and then it exploded. So now you've got all of these podcasts, all of these Netflix, everybody ran to it. It goes in waves. Netflix, a lot of them don't want to do murder anymore. They want to do scams. They want to do people, like con artists, that kind of thing. Anything that's kind of duplicitous or whatever, unless it's a big murder. Now
Like
we've
the Dirty John cases, stuff like
Like the,
that.
yeah, that kind of stuff. So, you see those cases, And you don't, what you've got now is you've got all of the crimes that were always the big, when you think about the biggest true crime stories in history, you know, number one, that's been written about the most is JFK, but that, let's put that aside for a second, and the Bible stuff. But the Manson case. And then you've got OJ and JonBenet, you know, all with a white female victim. You know, that's usually what's going to sell more than anything. That's just the way that everything is, which is unfortunate. So, but we've gotten to a place where that's why Bundy, everybody, you know, was such a big case, and they're still making movies about this schmuck to this day. When you get to, we've made so many stories and so many movies and documentaries, you're running sort of out of crime. So then when a story happens like the awful case in Idaho, where you do have white female victims, everybody's going to jump on it. So with that guy, you know, it's a, it you're going to see a lot of shows about this guy. There's going to be very little information. I don't think he's going to talk, and that's what you're seeing now. It's just everybody wants the serial killer. Everybody wants the criminal to be a guy that talks. They don't they don't talk anymore. You know what? BTK used to write letters, and then he talked a little bit. Obviously, Bundy represented himself. Berkowitz used to write letters. Zodiac used to write letters, you know, but when it comes to, you know, Long Island, we just solved Long Island serial killer. This guy hasn't talked. Golden State Killer, this guy hasn't talked, and they're not gonna, you know? So there's a lot less to work with. So when you get a guy like Idaho, you know, little drips and drabs are gonna come out. But as far as it being like a big series or anything like that, people will make it, but it's not going to be that interesting. And that's where we are right now.
Yeah, the court of public opinion obviously has already deemed him to be the killer. Do you think he's the killer?
I mean, I haven't listened to all the evidence. You know, it looks like it's pretty circumstantial at this point. I'm an Occam's razor guy, so I'm always going to say, listen, it's probably the killer. They knew that everybody was looking at them on this. They knew they had to do something. They had, you know, they put a lot of manpower and on this case, so they have a lot of evidence of. Seems like a lot of the evidence is the cell phone tower evidence, but I don't know if they've got DNA or anything like that, so I can't really speak on that. But I guess
Okay.
it looks pretty good, yeah.
Are there cases that you're still shocked haven't been solved? Like JonBenet Ramsey, do you think that will ever be
No,
solved?
that'll never be solved.
Do you have an idea
No.
who are you going to try and
I go
solve it?
back and forth. No. You know, the cases that I work on there's enough people that are looking at that case. You know, I
Why
don't
do you
look at,
think they haven't figured it out yet?
because it's so messed up.
Do you think that they screwed it up from the beginning?
Hang on 1 second. Sorry, my Siri is on for some reason. Somebody must have said, "Hey Siri." They definitely did screw it up from the beginning by not taking the family out of the house and let, you know, that sort of thing. You know, I go back and forth with it. I hate to speculate on these things, but you know, you'll listen to one, you know, there was definitely somebody that had inside information just based on that letter. It's definitely somebody that had watched the Mel Gibson movie Ransom, because there was a lot of language in there that was very similar to the note. Obviously, the note had the $118,000 or whatever it was bonus that he had. So that was weird. Occam's razor, which I'm always a guy of, which is not necessarily the simplest explanation, is the best one. It's the explanation that has the least amount of assumptions. So
Explain that.
to assume that somebody broke into the house, killed this li little girl without anybody knowing, sat there, wrote a letter that had so many details about that only really the family would know, and then left. That's a big assumption, versus somebody inside the house perpetrated this crime, and then they might have covered it up or did something to cover it up. There's less of an assumption there, less assumptions that you have to make. So Same thing with OJ. They kept on coming up with OJ. It could have been a serial killer, or it could have been this. It's like, no, there's less of the less assumption is that this is a guy who used to beat her all the time. And even putting all of the physical evidence aside, this is the guy that did it. So, I think that it still points to people that were sort of inside the house, but there's still a lot of, it's just a tragic case. And it's one of those cases that people will talk about, forever.
Is there a case that you're obsessed with now?
I'm working on this case in Philadelphia of this kid who, his name is Everett Beauregard. He was walking around where Drexel is. And he had just come back from a board game night. He was walking down the street, and a guy walks past him, is just walks past him, and then turns around and shoots him in the back of the head. And then shoots him 3 times as he's running away from him, and then is off into the night. And it's so random and so awful. And there's video of it, and pretty clear video of it. And I've been working on that one. So that one I would really, and I talked to the family, just talked to the dad last week. That's one that I would really like to solve. There's so little. There was on the 1 year anniversary, there was some graffiti placed right where he was killed, which could be a clue, could be absolutely nothing. The graffiti says JPEG in tagging script. So that's one that I definitely would like to see solved. And these take, I was doing one that was a hit and run, and it was a specific, it was a definitely the guy wanted to definitely run over this guy at a gas station in Albuquerque, New Mexico. And I started that one in 2016, and they just made the arrest now. So this stuff it can take a while, but it's still, you just got to stay on it. And what I tell people is if you want to do this as a citizen, and it helps if you've got journalism background and everything, but this is, I remember going to adopt a dog, and there's a sign up that says, are you ready to make this 15-year commitment? This is a lifetime commitment, and you could never ever tell a family I'm too busy. You can never, t if you get into this, you're in it, you just got to stick with it, and hopefully something will happen.
You mentioned the word meaningless. How often are crimes found to be random? I mean, I know when you're watching 48 Hours or even the ID Network, which I used to love, they would always say it's usually someone that you've known or there's some sort of connection, but there are some that are completely meaningless and random. Is there a statistic on that?
There probably is somewhere, but there's so many unsolved that you don't know. But remember, a lot of these crimes are happening on the street. Yeah, definitely if it's a woman, it's usually somebody that she knows. Absolutely. But men are the majority of homicide victims. So it might be somebody that they were in business with. It might be a rival. It might be over drugs. It might be over anything. It depends. But yeah, like the. That's the thing. It's just like we've sort of trained true crime fans into watching these shows, and the shows that they're watching, I would say probably 90% of true crime shows have a female in it somewhere. It's either a female victim or a female perpetrator, or it's a guy killing a man over a female. Most murders, that isn't it. That's not what happens. Most murders, it's male on male crime. That's it. There's no female involved or anything like that. They just don't make shows about that. So when everybody's talking about, true crime is not crime. True crime is its own sort of thing that's out there that's very separate, and it's not representative of what real crime is in America.
It's more pop culture crime a little bit. You mentioned Making a Murderer before, which, by the way, I loved that series or whatever you call it. Do you think, what was his name? Stephen Avery. Do you think that he is ever going to get out of prison? Do you think he's innocent?
Again, Occam's razor, the it's definitely, they tried to I didn't like that show just for a sense of that they left things out. They had eight episodes or 10 episodes, and they didn't include the DNA that was found, the sweat DNA that was found on the hood latch. It's like, and then they said we didn't have enough time. So I was like, no, you had enough time. You could have put that in there. Even if you were going to say that it was planted, you could have put that in there. That sort of stuff. They had an agenda to say that this guy was guilty or innocent. The Occam's razor is that he did it. Obviously, he had answered the door in a towel. She didn't like this guy. She had actually complained about him. The car was found there. Whether he was, it's a good story that he was framed because he was owed the money from the police department. It was, I would say, 90% that he did it, and 10% somebody else in that enclave, wherever they were, did it. Yeah. So
Right, but not planted by the police who didn't want to pay the bill.
I think they probably they framed a guilty man. I think they planted some of that evidence, definitely. Yeah. Not I
Got
shouldn't
it.
say definitely, but yeah.
But
I mean,
not for
finding the
no
key.
reason. Yeah.
Yeah, well, listen, that used to happen all the time. That's one of the reasons why we had a 90%, 90%, in 1960 we had a 90% clearance rate of murders in America. Now it's down to like 55.
Wow.
So 45% of murders in America are not going to be solved this year. When I started, it was like 64, so it's going down and down and down. And a lot of that was is that they used to beat the hell out of people to get confessions in 1960, but you also had less murders. You didn't have, everybody knew everybody. People trusted the cops. They would inform on other people, as good citizens should do. And that kind of thing. But now it's totally different. People don't talk to each other. They're not neighbors. There's a lot of drugs, a lot of guns, and that kind of thing.
Besides the case you're following in Philadelphia, is there anything that is there a case that might be bigger that we know about that rings a lot of bells for you that you're like, people are not looking at this one piece of evidence, or they have somebody that you don't believe is the right person in custody, or is there anything kind of in the back of your head that doesn't make sense to you?
Yeah, I think going back to Long Island, just because I did do the Unraveled podcast and spent and from and I'm from Long Island, the fact that we've got four murders, it's he might have done the others, he might not have, but I think that there's I'm worried that we're just going everyone's just like, oh, the Long Island serial killer was caught. And they're not going to look at these other six murders. And that's a case that I actually worked on that I when before it was even a Long Island serial killer. Like I worked on the Peaches case, who was a black woman whose body was found in a Hempstead Lake Park, Hempstead Town Lake Park. Also her parts of her body and her baby were found along Ocean Parkway. I had worked that back in like, in 2002 or something like that. I had sent a reporter out to do one of the cases of the women that were found in the Pine Barrens back in 2003 or something. So it's, I've been connected to that case and being from Long Island and everything and having worked it and having, interviewed a lot of different people that were on it. So I really want to see all of those victims get the same amount of play. Obviously, Shannon Gilbert, who I think that was a death of misadventure. I don't think she was the initial woman. She was able to bring so much light onto the case. And now, obviously the four women, the canonical Gilgo four, but the other victims out there, I definitely want to see. And there's other victims that are similar in on Long Island that I would like to see solved. There's one victim that's known as Cherries. A lot of unidentified victims that are out there. And Long Island was, you had a lot of serial killers on Long Island. In my school, my hometown, I had two. I had Joel Rifkin and a guy named Robert Shulman. And Joel Rifkin still has the number. He's got 17 serial killings, and that's the and when they interviewed him actually about, and he said that the Long Island serial killer was sloppy. He would have never put the bodies all in one location. That was back before they had solved it.
So, do you think the six bodies that still have not been tied to Rex, the guy who has been, is that his name? That has been accused of the murders of the other four. Do you think it is likely that he is the one that is responsible for those deaths, or do you think there is another person that could
There's
be
de
attributed?
yeah, he's not responsible for all of them. The Manorville two, who are the women who were dismembered in Manorville, and their heads were found in Gilgo or along Ocean Parkway. Possibility, though they were killed before the other four. It's a possibility, and we had thought about that maybe this guy had initially, in order to hide the victims' identities, had gone through the trouble of chopping them up, excuse me, and then when nobody found them, thought, you know what, why am I going through this, and I'll just bury them. That definitely could have happened. Could have been somebody else. Could have been a guy named John Bittrolf, who is in prison right now. You've got Peaches and the baby. You've got an Asian male who is dressed in women's clothing. You've got a lot of other bodies that are not even so. I don't think he did Peaches, or I just don't see that now.
You know, it's so interesting because I would love to be a fly on the wall in those conversations that police are having with them. I'm so curious if their tactic would be they just want to get a conviction on some of these deaths, or if they're going to come up with some sort of a plea deal because they want the answers.
You know what though? They didn't do that with GSK. I was hoping them to do that with Golden State Killer, where the plea deal that they had to do for him, listen, they saved a lot of money by giving him a plea deal, because that trial would have gone on and on and on, would have cost the state millions and millions of dollars. But I thought that if they gave him a plea deal, maybe he would give other evidence and say, oh, by the way, I also did this, this, and this crime. Because there was a ton of crimes that he easily could have done. If he stopped, when they say he stopped, that's fine. But there was a lot of crimes in between when he was the Visalia ransacker until, when he was caught, when he stopped. He didn't say anything and still hasn't said anything, so I was hoping that that would happen, but that's not necessarily the case. They'll just say, all right, you're guilty for these, and then that's it. So I would like to find out from Golden State Killer. And I tried after that happened, after they finally got him. My first thought was, okay, they got him, build a timeline on where this guy was. And, he was overseas, and then he was back here, and who else could he have murdered? And found a couple people who thought they definitely had been in contact with him, and found one woman who saw his picture and said, that was definitely the man that attacked me.
I'm so curious because you've worked so long on this Gilgo Beach case. Have you ever tried to reach out to the wife? I mean, I feel like she's somebody who obviously wants to talk since she's doing a Peacock special. And because you know so much about this, I feel like you can infiltrate
Yeah,
her.
now that woman's not talking because she's getting paid to talk by Peacock, so
Right.
she'll never say anything for the most part, unless it's really to potentially help the trial or something like that. She's
Right.
saving it all for that.
For her
And
big
quite
reveal, yeah.
frankly, what else? What is she going to say? Is she going to say, oh, I knew he was doing that? Then you're complicit. She's not
Right.
going to have anything really.
Yeah.
They already know timeline wise. Yes, they were out of the state when he did these crimes, and we knew it was probably something along those lines, because he would always pick he picked weekends, he picked days when it was usually in the summer, and it turns out his family was away, and we thought that was definitely a possibility, that this guy was going to be somebody that we knew he was probably a South Shore guy, which he was. But they did certain things, like they knew he had been calling victims, using the victim's phone to call the sister of one of the victims, and they traced the call, but they didn't record the call. It's like there's just like sloppy things like that that happened. But again, I go back to that they had it right there. When you have a 6'7" ogre of a man that drives a Chevy Avalanche, there's not many people that are like that. Nobody had a
Right.
Chevy. I don't think I've ever seen a Chevy Avalanche on Long Island, that was not a common car. So the fact that they could have just gone through Chevy Avalanches and done interviews and found the ogre and been able to go from there. They could have gotten this done within a month. And then it makes you realize, like, wow, I don't whether he had stopped by then or not, who knows? It's very easy that he could have stopped it. In the same way that Golden State Killer stopped, we think, right around the same time that DNA became part of criminal investigations. There was a case in England, and it was just like, it seems like he stopped right around that time.
Right.
This guy, it seems like he stopped, if he did, right around, obviously when they found the bodies and it became front page news.
I'm curious because you're so heavily involved in true crime. Do you have a favorite podcast or a show or a network that you really love?
A network? No. I've as far as true crime goes, I never really, I would watch them because they were in the zeitgeist or listen to them. Serial, I listened to because I knew the case was unsolved because he was still in jail. And because I had been pitching Hollywood to do unsolved cases for so long and they never would do it. That's one of the good things that has changed. They would never ever do unsolved cases. And unless it was JonBenet, and the fact that so I was watching Serial or listening to Serial, and then I was like, all right, well, how are they going to handle this? Because people are going to be pissed off when there's no ending. And people were okay with it. And that opened the door to, because I used to pitch ID all the time. I got so close with a show on ID, and we had done a pilot, and then they said, yeah, we had a crisis of faith, and we don't want to have anything that's open-ended. And I was like, you have 24 hours of programming that's about murders that have been solved. Why not just give back an hour to try to have people try and solve things? And that used to piss me off so bad. And Oxygen was actually the one that started doing more of the unsolved stuff, which is good on them. But yeah, no, I don't listen to that many podcasts or anything like that. There's certain people that I know that do really good work. Payne Lindsay, I think, does good work. Any podcast that's actually going to go interview people, I'll listen to. Or if it's really, really good writing, there's a podcast called Disgrace Land, which I think is a really good writing. But there's a lot of them that are just if it's a podcast that has actually done the investigative work, I'll check it out. But most
Yeah,
of the
a lot
time,
of
it's a
them
lot
are
of
regurgitating the news that's already
which
out
is
there.
more power to them. It's just not my thing.
Yeah. There is still an unsolved crime that happened at my boarding school in Running Springs, California, where so I went to one of those therapeutic boarding schools. The guy's name was Daniel Ewan, I think is how you pronounce his last name. And my school was called CDU. It's been closed down for abuse since, but he was trying to tell his parents that he hated it and wanted to leave. He ended up running away. It's interesting because I've run away from that same school twice. It's very
Right.
dangerous to get down the mountain. You have to hitchhike. You're up in the San Bernardino Mountains all the way in Running Springs, which is near Big Bear. And apparently, the way he chose to run away, I hitchhiked. But the way he ran away is he went down the face of the mountain, which is so dangerous, never to be found again. And throughout the course of decades, years, whatever, there has been sightings of him. there was also a serial killer, I guess, rapist, child pornographer, child molester, who was associated with the school, who used to work there, who was arrested and then died in prison. So a lot of unsolved, a lot of answers that are still out there. So that's where my love of true crime started, though, when I was younger and hearing about these things. And I ended up getting my master's in forensic investigation just because I was so obsessed with crime. And it just took some time later in life. I was like, this interests me and I want to do it. Can we expect any new books from you in the future?
I'm looking around at I'm doing some consulting work now that's true crime adjacent. It's more national security type stuff, and looking at terrorism right now and the way that the world is. Terrorism, obviously, one of the biggest true crimes in history is 9/11. And if you would ask people on the street, how many terrorism acts have there been since 9/11, people would say, oh, none. There's been so many, because it's been a lot of actors, lone wolf actors, that kind of thing. But then you've got, mass shooters is probably the biggest, other than the opioid epidemic. Mass shooters is still gigantic. But with terrorism after 9/11, the government gave a blank check and said, we never want this to happen again. Do what you can do. Obviously, you had the Patriot Act, you had all this stuff. That blank check is over, but the next generation of terrorists is happening now. And America now is embroiled in three big, conflicts. We've got Russia and Ukraine. We've got obviously Israel and Hamas, and we've got China is going to happen at some point. and terrorism in the background, but ISIS has regrouped now, and it's starting all over again, and they had the attack in Moscow that killed over 130 people. So that's one of the things that I'm looking at in terms of that is just something a little different. And you're seeing now the radicalization of people being used, on the internet, and whether these people are not actually, the shooter from is another guy from my school. Geez. The shooter at the Pulse nightclub actually went to my high school. And I actually was there. I was at Disney. I'd taken my family and my daughter for her 18th for graduation, wanted to go to Disney World. And we were there, and then the shooting happened at Pulse, and I had been still working at Crime Watch Daily, and I called them. I was like, I'm down here. Do you need me? And they said, yeah, go down there. So didn't go to Disney that day. Went and covered that. And then, which was just devastating, and turns out that guy was radicalized online. And then a day later, and damn alligator ate a kid in
I
Disney.
remember
Remember
that.
that? Yeah, that was all in the same week. And the
I
woman
did not
from,
know that was in the same week, but
and
that's
the woman,
crazy.
there was a woman that was a singer from American Idol who was shot by a deranged fan, who then killed himself. That was all in the same week in
Wow.
Orlando. Yeah. Yep.
Jeez.
I don't know what got us on that, but yeah.
Well, about if you're going to
But
write
that's
another
what I'm
book.
working on.
Yeah.
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 So, something along those lines. Again, though, terrorism, not sexy. It's not something, but it is, it's going to be a big, a lot bigger. Unfortunately, it takes something like 9/11 to get people to pay attention to it again,
Right.
but it's not good. And I originally was, I wanted to be an FBI agent when I went to school. I was studying cults for grad school, new religious movements we called them, and Christian apocalyptic cults. And that was right around while I was doing that, Oklahoma City happened, and Oklahoma City actually kind of killed the Christian apocalyptic white cult type thing. Nobody wanted to be involved with that. These guys were very much, they're not as committed. Those cult member type things and Christian cult type thing. They're bottom line, they're not as committed as ISIS. They're not as committed as the radical Muslim cults. So when that happened and they saw those babies dead, they're like, we don't want any problem, any we don't want that at all. So you're starting to see it again in a different way, obviously, with some of the stuff that has happened in the last 5 years. But yeah, it's a crazy time. There's a lot more that's out there. There's a lot of people doing true crime right now, and it's I just want to do something that's a little bit more. So I'm working on a couple things right now that are a little bit more preventative more than solving it in the future.
Right. Well, having you on is a reminder that, so many people love true crime, obviously, but there are so many crimes that do not get reported every year. There are so many things that are not on. Nancy Grace is not on anymore, but that are not highlighted in the pop culture world. And people have to remember that there are other stories and other people to remember and to keep looking for. People can get your book, Killers Amidst Killers. It's very good. Everyone should read it. Another book that I loved of yours is Chasing Darkness with Me. Great book. Tell people where they can get the books and where they can look you up.
It's always good to go to a local bookstore. Bookstores are like one of my favorite places. So go to a local bookstore, ask for it. If not, you can, if you don't have a local bookstore, even Barnes and Noble too. I was at Barnes and Noble yesterday. I love Barnes and Noble. Anything where I can go to a place and look around at books. But if you have to, obviously, it's on Amazon. It actually did, for some reason, there was a moment of pride. 3 weeks ago, for some reason, it spiked. There's an audiobook too, and I read the audiobook, and it was the sixth best-selling audiobook in America. It was beating Harry Potter. So I can say
Wow.
I beat Harry Potter in one day. One day I was ahead of Harry Potter.
Amazing.
Yeah.
And tell people where they can find you, your Instagram, all
Yeah,
that.
Billy Jensen on everything. I'm not really, nobody's on Twitter anymore, but
Yeah.
Threads, and then I'm on Sober Threads a lot. So, and but yeah, Instagram is really probably the best place.
Awesome. I appreciate you. We're going to have you on again in a couple months to recap everything and see what is new in your world. But thank you so much for coming on again. Congratulations with your sobriety and everything that's going on with you. I wish you the best of luck. We'll see you soon.
Thanks so much, Rachel.
Thank you so much for listening to Misunderstood. I'm your host, Rachel Yucatel. Please be sure to subscribe to the show and give us a 5-star rating and review. You can support the show by joining our Patreon at patreon.com/misunderstood with Rachel Yucatel. Do you have ideas for the show or want to reach out? Email us at info@misunderstoodpodcast@gmail.com. That's spelled MISS understood. Thank you so much, and I'll see you next time. Understood.